And when you can be vulnerable and yet strong at the same time, you inspire more trust, you inspire more motivation, you inspire more interest and people wanting to follow you because you were able to pivot and make that correction. That is what the world needs. Leaders that can navigate change, that can be adaptable, and sure, make a mistake, learn from it, grow, move forward, be stronger and better, and not be afraid and hide behind this facade or this mask of perfection, because it's not real and everybody knows it. And so to think that simply admitting a mistake demonstrates weakness, you're absolutely right. It actually demonstrates more courage than to hide it or ignore it.
Welcome to the All Things Leadership Podcast, where we bring together accomplished experts to share their diverse perspectives, compelling stories, and insightful lessons on effective leadership and personal growth. So, whether you're a seasoned executive navigating the corporate world or an emerging leader on the rise, this podcast is your go-to resource for valuable takeaways to fuel your success in your leadership journey. Join us as we explore the art and science of leadership, unlocking the secrets to explore your leadership skills and empower you to make a meaningful impact in your organization and beyond. Today, I have with me a very special guest, Amber Carlson-Hayes, who is the president of Archway Learning Solutions and also the author of the ebook Torch, which is a part of the Ignite Your Legacy series. Amber, welcome to the All Things Leadership Podcast.
Thank you so much, Fred. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Certainly, pleasure is all mine. Amber, let's start off by asking you what inspired you to write that book.
Well, Torch is, has definitely been a journey for sure. It actually began as a learning designer. We create a lot of different training experiences and solutions, and yet oftentimes we find that leaders will come to us and say, we want to make sure our people are really learning something, or we can't tell that they're really learning something. We need help to revamp our training. And so it really began as a book to help leaders hold their teams accountable to learning and applying what they learned. But the more I unpacked that, I realized it's more than just that one moment of accountability. It's a larger need for leaders to have more connection, more relationship, instill more ownership with their team to hold them accountable to everything, to hold and to inspire them to grow and be more. And so Torch morphed from this one singular focus to a much larger, larger way of helping leaders uplift and create powerhouse teams.
I love that, Amber, and leadership is one of those topics, and that's why I'm really passionate about this because it's never ending, right? There's always a side, there's always a learning opportunity when it comes to leadership, and we can look at this from very different angles. And so I like the approach you took there by sort of creating the series and inspiring leaders. Share that quote with me. We're talking about this quote that sort of you ascribe to this book, and I want us to sort of unpack that quote a little bit, but I'll let you give that away.
Well, sure. There's a main quote that I often say that has to do specifically with the book Torch. And the quote is, before you can pass the torch, you must first have a torch worth passing.
And that is such a profound quote there, Amber. I mean, it's because many of us will call ourselves leaders for various reasons, whether it's title, and we'll touch on that a little bit, but let's unpack that a little bit. You talk about you must have a torch that's worth passing. Why is that so significant?
Well, it has a little bit to do with succession planning, and it has a little bit to do with legacy. So, as a leader, we want and should be creating something that is worthy of handing to that next person to continue it to grow and make it better. So that's really what we're seeking to do. But oftentimes, just because we have a title or a role or a set of responsibilities, we can get lost in the day-to-day grind. We can get lost in all the various reporting or process or all the fires we have to put out, and we neglect creating that impact or creating that long-term vision or developing that legacy that we will then later pass. So we need to be very mindful of what we're doing every day in order to craft the legacy that we will be passing. So I say we live our legacy. We don't leave it. We live our legacy every day.
Yeah, yeah. So true. And we're in an era of leadership where, you know, look at it, whether politically, you know, throughout organizations, where it seems that leaders aren't taking this to heart, right? Aren't too concerned about the legacy that they live or leave behind. They just live anyhow, right? And, you know, sort of let the chips fall where they may. And you know, integrity is almost non-existent here, right? Ethics almost non-existent. People are just doing whatever they want and saying whatever they say, and really don't seem to care. And you know, that sort of is troubling, right? Because we have a generation that's coming up that's looking up to these so-called leaders, and I wonder what sort of lessons are being left, or what legacies are being left behind from these leaders. And you talked about title. I was having a conversation with someone the other day, and they talked about, well, people respect you or they listen to you because of the title that you have. Is title important? And if, why or why not? Your reactions to that?
Sure. I hear this all the time. Different speakers will talk about, you don't need to have a title to be a leader. And I agree wholeheartedly with that. But I also believe there's kind of two different types of leadership here. One is where, title or not, you are following what needs to be followed to reach that vision, to follow that mission, to inspire others and uplift others. That's the foundation of leadership, right? But if you now have a title, maybe it is an assigned title because that's specific to your role, or maybe it's a gained title or earned title through reputation. Perhaps someone speaks quite a bit about a topic. Now they have that responsibility to the people that they lead. And so title to me equals responsibility. Title doesn't equal leader. Title equals responsibility. And we have to take responsibility. So when you're given a title, you're given authority, right? You're given decision-making power. You're not actually given responsibility. That's something you must take. So we take that responsibility when we have that that title, but there's a weight to that. That responsibility means the decisions we make has a ripple effect impact on the lives of other people because we have that authority. And so title to me, it's kind of the two-edged sword. No, you do not need a title in order to be a leader. Anybody can be a leader and inspire others. However, if you do have a title, it's a different type of responsibility and weight that impacts how you lead others.
Yeah, that is so profound. And if I'm hearing you correctly, the title itself does not make one a leader, right? It enhances who you already are, right? So you can have the title as a leader, but if you're not living a life worthy of that leadership, right, or what's expected of you, then the title alone is not, right, going to make a difference. Let's think of, you know, like an army or a general in the army. You know, it carries a lot of weight, right? You have to respect that office or the president of any country. You have to respect that office, right, because of that title, which is powerful in and of itself. But if the lifestyle or if the leadership of this person holding that title becomes questionable, right, then it's sort of impact. So it's both, right? Those go hand in hand. It's not the title necessarily or the leader necessarily, right? That makes it, right, if I'm understanding correctly.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think you hit the nail on the head. It's respect for the title or the office. And I think we need to have a lot more respect in the world these days. And you can have respect for someone and disagree. You can have respect for someone and not like them. So having respect for a title is one thing, but following the person, the leader that has that title, is a whole different thing. I think all of us have had leaders that have had whatever title that we would not follow, that did not inspire or motivate us. And then there have been others that have, Right. And so what is that distinct difference? It's the person making the choices that they do, that they are consciously impacting other people and taking that responsibility for that impact and living that way every day to inspire and uplift others. So like I said, title is not so important. It's more the leader themselves, but it does have a weighty responsibility.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So true. Sort of going back, let's go back to your book. I haven't read it, I must admit, but it's on my list to grab. But share some of the concepts or what you address in this book as it relates to leadership.
Certainly. Torch is all about leadership lessons, skills specific to those people with a title. Usually executive level leaders that have large responsibility and they're seeking to grow and nurture powerhouse teams. And so in Torch, there's two parts to the book. In the first part, we look at foundational skills that leaders can use to create that team first. And so we go through five different lessons and how can you create a foundational culture where your team is now ready to be able to take on bigger challenges and more difficult kind of future. So then the second part of the book is all about transformation. How do you take a team that's already working well, already communicating well, they're hitting their goals, they're reaching KPIs, there's a good synergy. How do you level them up to powerhouse? So that's the second half of the book. How do you nurture and grow and facilitate an organization that can move the needle for a team like that? But before you can move that needle, you first have to have the foundation. So that it's really two parts of the book, that foundational and transformational.
Let's talk about some of those foundational skills. I mean, leadership, like we mentioned earlier, has and continues to evolve, right? Back in the industrial age, you know, we're used to the command and control type thing. You had the boss and whatever they said, everyone obeyed. And then now you're moving into a lot of, you know, there's this transformational leadership, the servant leadership, this cultural intelligence that has a lot to do with, you know, dispersed associates, you know, working from different parts of the world and having that intelligence to realize that you have to manage, you know, them very differently. There's emotional intelligence, which is really huge. You got to take control, understand your emotions, and then the emotions of your team, right? One size really never fits all when it comes to leadership. And so there are all these variables that come into play, which continues to make leadership a very complex management style. What are some of those foundational leadership skills that are fundamental to any leader to have?
Well, I think, first of all, when we think about leadership, we have to acknowledge that we're leading human beings, right? It's people that we are leading. If we were not doing that, we wouldn't be leaders. We'd be called programmers, right? So we would be putting in a program to get the output that we want. Instead, as leaders, we are working with people. And just as there are infinitely unique people, there's going to be such complexity in how they are led and how we can motivate and inspire. So to me, there's so many different leadership skills out there. I mean, I could give you such a list. I chose those that were the most foundational at the human level, at that core level of relationship that drives inspiration. So the first one is trust. The very first lesson that we learn about in Torch is how do we facilitate and foster trust? That is a big topic. That's a big skill. That's not something you can snap your fingers and all of a sudden have. However, there are ways from a very first engagement with someone that you can demonstrate that you're trustworthy and you can continue that ongoing relationship to continue to validate that and nurture that. But as a leader, if we truly want to inspire, we have to have our teams trust us. And so we start with trust as the first lesson.
Yeah, I feel like trust is so foundational. I was in a training session yesterday, and we think we're talking about performance management and coaching, and we're just simulating doing like a role play where the associate was going through something and the leader then had to step in and coach. And it was brought up that before you even get to all the fundamentals of coaching and all the models and all of that, there has to be trust, right? Because if trust has been eroded or is non-existent, there is really no way for you to be able to break through that initial conversation to even start peeling back, you know, what's going on. If your team doesn't trust you, if they can come to you as a leader to feel safe, if there is no psychological safety for them to be able to be open with you and candid with you about what they're going through, nothing really substantial can happen, right? How does a leader who, first of all, how does one build trust in a team?
To me, trust is the ultimate weapon against unconscious bias. So when we can create trust between two people and there's misunderstanding or unintentional confusion or miscommunication, because there's trust, then we're able to mutually work through that together. You know, if I make a mistake, if you make a mistake, okay, we're human, right? So let's work through it together because trust is there. But the moment trust is gone, it's all of the frustration, all of the anger, any mistake that's made can erode or destroy the relationship. So to establish and create trust, first of all, we have to listen. Active listening is one of the most powerful ways that we can develop trust as a leader. We are looked to as leaders to be the spokesperson, right? To be the speaker, to be on the stage, to be the one sharing the message. Yet the most powerful leaders are the ones that are quiet and that listen to their team, to their people, to their colleagues, that listen to their competitors, to those that hate them, right? They listen and they are curious and interested genuinely in how they can make an impact and how they can help navigate whatever it is that they're working through. So listening is the most foundational and best way to begin to build trust. Simply being quiet and absorbing. But it's not passive, I will say that. So to be effective with listening, you're reading between the lines, you're hearing what is not said as well. But that will help so much with creating a sense of trust between you and that other person.
I love that. How about in a case where trust has been broken? The leader messed up, you know, they did something they weren't supposed to do, they didn't honor their word, and now there's no trust. How does this leader build back trust or restore trust in that team?
To me, that's the next level, right? That's a little bit more transformational. And so that's actually the skill in the second part of the book, which is transparency. So if, hey, like I said, we're human, we make mistakes. I said I was going to do something and I didn't do it, but here is why. Here's the reason why. And if there's good reason that was methodically thought through and based on, you know, evidence and information and data, then explaining that is really helpful, but maybe they just screwed up. They forgot. They missed the mark. They had a strong intention, but weren't able to back it up. They need to say, I was wrong, and here's how I'm going to fix it. That's one of the best ways to rekindle trust, is to simply take responsibility as the leader to say, I was wrong, and to ask for that forgiveness. I'm sorry that this happened. And I apologize for the impact it's had on you. And I want to make it right. And then to actually follow through on making it right. But transparency to me would be that kind of next level where if it's eroded or if you're wanting to even further increase trust, that heightened level of transparency makes the difference.
I'd argue, Amber, that it takes a very courageous leader to own up to their mistakes or errors of their ways, and I think that's where that issue of vulnerability comes in, right? It's often looked at as a sign of weakness if a leader, you know, comes out say, you know, I'm sorry, I messed up. I don't know the answer to this, and you know, let me go find out. There is such a high burden or expectation that's placed on that leader that many leaders have it challenging, find it challenging to be to come out to just to own up to their mistakes, because there'll be or the fear of being perceived as weak by either their peers or their teammates. And I feel like this is sort of a double-edged sword there, right? That yes, you're a leader, yes, you have that title, but there comes a time when you just have to be vulnerable, right? Vulnerability is key, and it doesn't make you weak. I'll let you respond to that school of thought about vulnerability and why it's important as a leader, especially in restoring trust that's broken.
Absolutely. It actually impacts how you are seen on an emotional level by your team. That this person that is my leader, they did something or neglected to do something that had a negative impact. And yet they're saying, I see that. I see that I was wrong. And I apologize for that. And here's the path forward. And when you can be vulnerable and yet strong at the same time, you inspire more trust. You inspire more motivation. You inspire more interest and people wanting to follow you because you were able to pivot and make that correction. That is what the world needs. Leaders that can navigate change, that can be adaptable, and sure, make a mistake, learn from it, grow, move forward, be stronger and better, and not be afraid and hide behind this facade or this mask of perfection, because it's not real and everybody knows it. And so to think that simply admitting a mistake demonstrates weakness, you're absolutely right. It actually demonstrates more courage than to hide it or ignore it.
Yeah, and I think, Amber, that this is really what makes it difficult to be able to switch from, that old school mindset of what leadership is, right? It's the command and control. It's what I say. It's my title. It's my authority. I was in a training session with a group of law enforcement officers a couple of years ago, and there was this, we're talking about emotion, managing emotions, and some of these team members were describing how difficult it is for them because of that office that they hold. People see them, law enforcement officers, and alpha male personality, and you can't be vulnerable. You can't show your struggles because this is who you are. And a lot of them, quite a number of them, admitted having experienced depression as a result of that, because they're not able to share openly what they're going through, and it has all sorts of effects. There are suicidal thoughts and all of that, just because they have to mask, like you rightly said, put on that facade, put on that false ego, pretend you're someone else that you're not. But behind all of that, you're human, and you're hurting, and you need someone to listen to you. By the expectations of the role or their job is that you portray that bravado, that macho, personality, right? How do we challenge that paradigm, if we can at all, to embracing more of, what's real, the transformational leadership, the emotional intelligence, being in touch, self-care, and realizing that it is okay to say you're not okay, right? How do we shift? How do we make that shift? I know it's challenging, right? Depending on the nature of some of these jobs, whether you're a police officer, military, or whatever. I know those are very complicated, but how do we change this paradigm into embracing more of the humanity, right? Being in touch with our feelings and being real with ourselves and being real with our teammates when we're going through some of these challenges.
I think it's a systemic problem. I think that we have organizations that throughout history have utilized that bravado as a way of controlling the masses to make it easier to control. And have idolized that bravado to make it that is the goal to be that alpha, to be that quote unquote leader, because you're the head of the pack, right? You're the quarterback on the field, so you have to have your act together and you have to be the strongest out there. So if we look at the system itself and stop rewarding the idea of bravado, instead listening to that vulnerable person who is willing to say, I'm wrong, or I'm struggling, or this is hard, or I need to be better here. If we celebrate that, and I just want to be careful. I'm not saying we're celebrating necessarily weakness. We're celebrating the openness a person has to just be themselves, to be human, whatever version of that they're experiencing, and to be able to say, I don't know. And so it's interesting that you bring up law enforcement. I'm doing some research into some projects in law enforcement as well. And one common theme that's come up, I've done some interviews with some former FBI agents and trainers, is that every police officer is a leader when they're in the community. They're a leader already, right? Just by being a police officer. But many of the officers do not receive leadership training. And they may not even see themselves as leaders, but in fact, they are. And so when they have that training, that knowledge, that awareness that they are a leader, then the bravado that gets in, that could potentially get in the way of a communication with someone, changes. It shifts, because now as a leader, I have responsibility to help these people, to protect and serve, to uplift. So when a police officer sees themselves as a leader, it is one of the anecdotes to a bravado that might get in the way.
And I think it also brings up the topic of accountability and responsibility, right? If we as leaders expect our team members or holding our team or teams accountable for you know, their work or things that they're supposed to do, I mean, what better way for us to be able to emulate that, right? By holding our own selves accountable. And I feel like it creates such a pedestal, a false pedestal, I might add, of leadership, where, you know, you can't be touched because of where you sit, whether you're in the ivory tower or C-suite or whatever. And it creates this false narrative about what leadership is. And that's why this topic is so important, that we've got to start humanizing leadership, that it's okay, right? It's okay to err. It's okay to make mistakes. And I feel like the opposite is actually true. It takes a lot of courage to be able to own up as a leader, to say, look, I messed up. I am sorry. I shouldn't have done this. And, you know, and I feel like that creates that trust that we talked about, right? That's really how to build trust.
I just want to add something there. It has to do with how people like other people. It can be just this simple. There could be someone that has everything together. They seem to have the nice house, the nice car, the great job, the white picket fence, whatever, right? They have that pedestal. And we look to them and we like them. I mean, good for them. Okay, fine. They're nice people. We like them. But if they were to say, you know, I'm struggling with this, and then you see their humanity, then you actually feel connected to them, right? They're no longer this illusion of a person that we so often see on social media, the illusion of what people want to show. They're not an illusion anymore. They're a human, and that's something I can relate to. Every fantastic story out there has to do with struggle. That is the arc of stories. And the same is true in why we like other people, because they struggled with something and they got through it and perhaps brought you along on that journey. So I think seeing mistakes or seeing vulnerability as a lesser is wrong. And it's proven over and over again, and just simply how we like other people and the stories that we read with that arc.
Yeah. I wonder, Amber, if there's also some level of responsibility that the teams have, or followers, I'm using followers here in quote, that we have, or expectation that we have really of these leaders. Because I've been in, you know, certain settings or even cultures, I might add. I've experienced different cultures where there is such an expectation that if you're a leader, you know, you're, I mean, some cultures, you know, where leadership's concerned, you know, the bow, you know, to leaders, and there is this level of respect, right, that we ascribe to leaders. And I wonder if we perpetuate, right, what happens here, where we fan the flame, so to speak, and we're feeding into it. And I know culturally it can be difficult if that's really what the expectation is of the culture. It's really not a whole lot you can do. But we've also seen it manifest in certain ways that it feeds into the ego. They take this too much into heart, and to heart, and it's the spillover, right? Because this person is being deified, so to speak, or put on such a high pedestal, they start to respond that way. I mean, even here in the United States, we've seen it. We're not going to go into the political discussions, but we've seen it. We've heard things that have been said just because a person, occupies a certain space or office, and it's just that the power, right, that we give, and it's I think it creates a lot of the problem too. Then what is the expectation that we should have? Should we have different expectations of these leaders? Should we start holding them accountable? Should we start treating them differently? Just so we're not making compounding the problem, right, that we're trying to solve here or talk about here.
So that's a very big question. That's a worldwide question,
It
right? So
is.
when we think about world culture and the respect that we need to have for that culture, especially being outside of it, I would say that respect is the first and foremost thing that we must do to honor that culture. And we certainly cannot go in there as an outsider and attempt to change anything. However, how we receive it and how we then take it back with us or within our realm of control, our circle of influence, that's where we can have a say in how we can respond or work with a team based on a cultural nuance, right? So we can take what happened and interpret it in the best possible way to then positively impact our community. But having said that, how do we hold leaders accountable as a follower? So this to me goes a little bit back to that initial question of a leader with and without title. So a follower can be a leader without the title, right? So by holding a leader accountable, that is another leadership trait, that your intention holding that person accountable that has that leadership title is to create synergy, is to move positive ambition forward, to be helpful, to correct a mistake, then you're on the right track. And we should be doing that. And we should be able to openly communicate about those areas. However, if the intention is simply to tear that person down or cause disrespect towards the title, then it's not helpful and it's not being beneficial to anyone. So to me, that's not a leader. So I think, yes, we should be holding our leaders accountable to what they say. And that goes back then to the system. And how do we change that? Well, that's an even bigger question. So it's just, again, within your realm of influence and control, what can you do every day that has that ripple effect impact on the legacy that you leave with every individual person? Because what you do now with someone else will have an impact with what they do with the next person. And that's the legacy that we live every day. So if we think about it from that point of view, and we accept that legacy leadership is the ultimate goal, then everyone would have a different way that they could interact with one another, knowing long-term impact is ultimately the goal, that long-term positive change. So that's the mission that I am on, actually, is to define, support, uplift the concept of legacy leadership and that longer and larger scale impact.
Yeah, I love that, and we could go on and on and on. But I think one of the things that resonates with me here is the quote, which I love, and I'm going to repeat it. It's before you pass the torch, you must have a torch that's worth passing. Amber, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Let's talk about the book a little bit before. Where can listeners find your ebook and talk to us about what's coming, what to expect with the series and all that?
Sure. So the best place to get it is at igniteyourlegacyseries.com. However, it's also available directly on Amazon. But if you go to that website, igniteyourlegacyseries.com, then there's all kinds of other goodies that can go along with it. And you learn a lot more about the book itself. But That would be the best place to go. And this is book one of a series. And so this first book is Torch. As I mentioned, it's all focused on powerhouse team development. The second book is called Spark, and that is all about the inner spark within us. How do, if Torch is about motivating others, Spark is about how we create the flame of motivation within ourselves every day. Like, why do I do this every day, right? Why have I taken this responsibility? How do I continue to fan that flame? And then finally, the third book will be called Flame, and it has to do with the relationships in our lives that support us, uplift us, and allow us to make those difficult choices, or do something challenging because we have that support around us to be able to do it. How do we cultivate and create those relationships? So those are the three that will be coming. So this year, 2024, Torch will be coming out, and then Spark will begin next year, but it won't be out till 26.
Very well. Thank you, Amber, for sharing those nuggets with us. I mean, these are lessons that we can apply, to our own, personal lives and professional lives. But this is so much needed here in this world today. Thank you so much for spending time with us. Until we come your way next time, thanks again, and be well.
Thank you so much.